found a new kid from Chicago that's got, we think he's got a lot of talent. He's volunteered to help us out on this next song, and here he is, Mr. Billy Corgan.
Hello, dear listeners. This is DJ Double M again, as every Tuesday from noon to 1. I'm glad you joined me this morning. This is my show, Do's and Don'ts, and you're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So in my show, I'm going to talk about 10 biggest mistakes girls do. In this segment, I will speak about relationships, even though I'm not quite sure if that's the right word to describe it. I have always been a guy's girl. Back when I was a kid, iPads weren't yet invented, so I spent my free time playing soccer outside. I would wake up early in the morning, hop into my old scuffed jeans and my mom's tank top that she used to wear back in the 80s and that was probably about 4 sizes too big for me, grab a couple of cents for my lunch, which was the cheapest ice cream at the kiosk, and run outside. I'd spend hours and hours kicking the ball, playing cards, and building tree houses with my friends, who, as you probably could already guess, were all guys, and all of them were about 4 years older than me. So this makes it logic that I couldn't avoid hearing all their inside jokes that were not always appropriate, and all their stories that even I don't have the bravery and rudeness to tell on air. And this was just the start. Even after I started growing out of the street girl's look and turned into a probably most standard girly girl walking around in tight dresses and high heels, I kept being friends with mostly guys. Even though now my relationships and friendships would start off slightly different than back in my childhood. Not in the soccer field, fighting over the ball and throwing sticks at each other, but by them trying to hit on me. Usually it would take them about a week to cut down to crap and understand that there is no point of making those trite sayings and pickup phrases even triter. So yes, I usually still am the only girl in the company sitting with a bunch of guys and listening to their horrible stories, and I'm not gonna lie, laughing my ass off. I must admit, my best friends and even family members, my dad, my grandpa, were always even overly honest about their relationships with me. So I'm stating my credibility on my personal experiences, as I usually do, and I'm pretty confident about it for now, because my advices tend to work for most of my girlfriends so far. So listen up. I'm probably the least judging person on this planet, and even though my ways of expressing myself in English can sometimes be a bit too harsh, I usually don't mean anything bad. I'm continuing this by saying I would probably enjoy not understanding guys as much as I do, as it would make the game so much more interesting. I wouldn't mind switching places with one of those accessory girls, as I call them, for one day. Let me explain who those are. That is the girl suffocated by the tight black dress, unsuccessfully trying to gracefully sit down in the club without showing her panties off. The girl who sits in front of the table full of guys and doesn't see a word the whole night, and is happy if someone offers her a drink. And lastly, that's the girl who gives in after a one-day guy's investment and is honestly shocked that he never texted her the next morning. These are the girls whose only goal is to look attractive, which usually turns out to be the opposite way, have a one-night stand with the guy, and walk around proud the next day with their heads high so all their neck bruises would be visible to the rest of the planet. So let me clear this out for you. You do not look as a winner in no one's eyes. you look sad for most girls, and if they talk about you, no, they're not jealous. They're sorry for you. And as for guys, well, I have another surprise to you. Guys talk to each other. The biggest myth ever is that guys do not gossip about girls. Believe me, they do. And they might do so in an even more open way than usually us girls do. This means that the attention you've been getting from his friends after the night you've spent with him and he never called in the morning is probably a product of marketing. Have you heard of such thing? They know you're easy now, and if you're gonna go for his friends, no, you're not gonna make him jealous. Furthermore, you can consider yourself really lucky if afterwards they are not going to discuss you, and I mean you, in a really intimate way after this happening the next time they meet for a beer. Here's a revealer. The girls who had more guys than their age aren't the most desirable ones and the ones who get the most offers. They're the ones who take all the offers they get without any selection, and if they don't get them, they might just offer themselves. The truth is that such behavior is the number one indicator of having really low self-evaluation and confidence. It's not an accomplishment nor something to brag about. It's a problem probably seated in their teenage heads by the scandalous full of sex advertising media and cosmopolitans. Believe me, no guy will take a girl like that or a girl with such a history seriously. You're just free time, fun time tools for them. Yes, they might text you once in a while when they're lonely and bored, but that's pretty much it. And you may try to find justifications for that by trying to convince yourself that he doesn't reply to you because he's busy or he's sleeping, while all of us really know that one can always make time for what's important for him or her, and also can always make an excuse for what's not. And the sleep excuse is stupid too, because the last time I've checked, humans, unlike bears, don't have winter sleep. So saying this, let me follow by giving a couple of tips for girls. I'll start by saying that many girls blame only the guys. So don't forget, girls, you are there too. It's a two-way street. If you do choose to be an accessory girl, don't expect anything. This way you can save some nerve and never lose. Second, don't lie to yourself and don't try to convince yourself that having been with more guys than your age is normal and fun. It's not, and neither is it. Don't say that life's unfair because a guy can have a lot of girls and still be cool and okay, and a girl cannot do the same. Yes, it's unfair, but it's not going to change if you complain about it or use it to justify yourself for changing guys like socks. That would be trashy. A screwed up reputation is always hard to fix, and it is even harder to change a lifestyle, so might as well just don't choose the wrong from the start. Don't be annoying and don't stick like a leaf to a guy's ass in a sauna. Don't get angry and blame the guy if you had a one-night stand and he left. He didn't sign a contract to stick around. In fact, he probably hasn't even given you a slight signal of planning to do so, and furthermore, you probably didn't even bother asking. Don't say he made you or convince you to interact in any physical relationship or activity with him. You were there too, and you could have made a different choice. Oh, you were drunk? Whose problem is that? Remember, girls, you are the only ones who are supposed to take care of yourself, and you are responsible for your actions. You're the only one who's going to live in your body for the rest of your life, and you really don't want to metaphorically saying shit all over the place. I mean, inside of you. I'm not judging anyone here. I'm simply saying that it is always healthy to think before acting and evaluate the possible consequences. If you want to have fun, do. But please don't complain about it after if you get hurt. Cheating is a two-way street too. It has a different significant meaning to every person, I would say. But if I would try to define and explain it, first of all, I would divide it to two segments, cheating guys and cheating girls. The main difference here is that cheating guys can be only physically interested, while for girls, it's usually including somewhat emotions. So number one tip for those whose partners are cheating, don't judge others depending on yourself. Try to always think rationally. It is always the best choice. If you have been with a person for a while, he or she is probably worth it. Every relationship has flaws, and if you have strong feelings for your spouse, don't let emotions or anger lead you to wrong decisions. This, of course, only can be applicable if you see that your partner regrets of what he or she has did. Surprisingly, guys are actually capable of cheating and still loving one girl. This was a really big shocker to me because I would never imagine doing that on my like by myself because that's just illogical. So as for girls, I don't think that is possible. Men who cheat haven't fallen out of love. They've become unsatisfied with the current state of it. Cheating usually occurs in the phase of companionate love when couples begin to settle down, have kids, and solidify the life being built together, says clinician psychologist Andrew Brosh, PhD. While they're fulfilled in some areas like being a provider, the romance may be missing. We more often think of women complaining about a lack of romance, but men feel it too, says Dr. Brosh. They frequently suffer in silence, believing that they can't get what they want from their spouses. To avoid this or similar situations in your relationships, talk. Oh, I'm sure girls love doing this. But to make it productive, you have to stop whining and actually state your thoughts rationally. And that way, you will make it easier to both of you. Be someone your spouse wants to trust, wants to talk to, and wants to tell about their day to. Not the angry, scary witch from the fairy tales who's always angry, cranky, unsatisfied, and yelling at him. But now we're talking about not marriages and 10-year-long relationships because we're young and we're in college. And if you cannot put up with some things in your relationship, if you're constantly being hurt and have to cry every evening before night, leave it. If you're one of those really rational people and you're not willing to compromise, and for you it's more fun to fight and make up new trouble before solving the already existing ones, again, leave it. It's that easy. The truth is that the human mind is more capable of self-programming than you could ever imagine. Congratulations, you have saved some expensive time. Don't be sad about what's over. Instead, try looking at the bright side. You got to know that this doesn't work for you or that this isn't the right person for you now, let's say in college, not when you're married and have 3 kids and a household together. You saved not only time, but a lot of nerve and money on Xanax or other stuff people get to get over their troubles with. I'd like to end this segment with a thought. Nowadays, people tend to chase the real feeling, talk themselves into liking or loving someone, trying to fake warm emotions or to replace them with one-night stands, while the truth is that none of this is ever going to work. Instead of being social standard, try being you and making only the choice that you feel good about making. Don't mind what the commercials, your best friends, or your mom says, because they are not going to live in your body forever, as you will. You don't want to run around screaming YOLO, which means you only live once, I assume you know it, nor share your body, which, by the way, doesn't walk separately from your soul and it's attached to it, with random people. And wasting your precious youth or something that is usually based on hormones and lack of attention, doing that just would be really stupid. So my last advice, which pretty much consists the point of this segment, is do not expect a flower to grow in a piece of shit. So meet you after the break.
just another doll. And I try to warn ya, what you want, what you need has been right here. Yeah, I can see that you're holding back those tears. Tears. I wanna save ya, wanna save your heart tonight. He'll only break ya, leave it torn apart. Oh, I can't be no Superman. Before you, I'll be superhuman. I wanna save ya, save ya, save ya tonight.
Up and away, I'll take you with me.
Welcome after the break. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. And this is show Do's and Don'ts, and I'm your host, DJ Double M. If it has to happen, then it has to happen first, writes Laura Vanderkam, time management expert and author of What the Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast. In this segment, I'm going to share 12 things really successful people do before breakfast with you. It might be a way of a healthier or maybe to a more scheduled lifestyle. Apparently, the morning for the most successful people is the time when they do things that hold the biggest importance for them. Science supports the strategy. It has been scientifically proven that one's willpower works best during the early hours. Willpower, according to Roy Baumeister, a professor at the Florida State University, is like a muscle that gets stretched and fatigued from overuse. We would probably all agree that it's easier to lose self-control over anything, a diet, studies, or even optimistic thoughts in the evening. As they say, the morning is wiser than the evening. So what do really successful people do in the morning? Successful people value time, maybe because they usually never have enough of it. The first rule is to wake up early. That way, everyone who would normally bother them with phone calls, questions, and work are still asleep, and this gives them some free oneself alone time to do whatever is important, from jogging to various projects and stuff that need to be finished. According to the website entrepreteur.com, 90% of successful people wake up before 6 a.m. on weekdays. This includes PepsiCo CEO Indra Nooyi, who wakes up at 4 a.m., and Disney CEO Bob Iger, who gets up at 4:30 to read. The top morning activity of the rich and powerful seems to be exercise, be it lifting weights at home or going to the gym or jogging. Beyond the fact that exercising in the morning means they can't later run out of time for that, Vanderkam says that a pre-breakfast workout helps reduce stress later in the day, counteracts the effects of high-fat diet, and improves your sleep quality also, so you're going to actually be better rested. The quiet hours of the morning can be the ideal time to focus on an important work project without being interrupted. What's more, spending time on it at the beginning of the day ensures that it gets your attention before others, like kids, employees, bosses, friends, and family. Novel writing and art making and other free time activity is easily skipped when you've been in meetings all day or tired and hungry and still have to figure out what's for dinner. That's why many successful people put in an hour or so on their personal projects before they officially start their days. History teacher Charlotte Walker told Vanderkam she spends the hours between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. working on a book about the religious politics of West Africa. She can read journal articles and write several pages before dealing with her teaching responsibilities at the University of Chicago. We may accept the family dinner, but there's nothing that says you have to have a big family meal at night, says Vanderkam. Some successful people use the mornings to invest in family time, whether reading stories to their kids or cooking a breakfast meal together or just talking. Judy Rosenhall, a financial planner in New York, told Vanderkam that unless she's traveling, mornings are her special time with her young daughter. She helps her to get dressed, make the bed, and occasionally they work on art projects together. They also make breakfast and sit at around the table and catch up on what's going on. She calls those 45 minutes the most precious time she has in a day. In the evening, it's more likely you'll be tired from the day's activities, and time can easily be wasted with dinner preparations and zoning yourself out in front of the TV. That's why many successful people make connecting with their parents a morning ritual. One of the most important parts of a relationship is to give each other as much time as possible, which in these cases we're talking about is usually not that much. Especially if you like to make it home for dinner, the mornings can be a great time to meet with people for coffee or breakfast. Plus, networking breakfasts are less disruptive than midday lunches and more work-oriented than boozy cocktail parties, Vanderkam notes. Christopher Colwin, a New York-based lawyer and entrepreneur, started a networking group for Ivy League alums called Ivy Life. Most days, he wakes at 5:30 a.m. to walk his dog and read, but every Wednesday, he attends an Ivy League networking breakfast. I feel I'm fresher and more creative in the mornings, he told Vanderkam. By the end of the day, my mind is more cluttered, he continued. Before they head out of the door, many successful people devote themselves to a spiritual practice, such as meditation or a prayer to center themselves for the rush of the day. Manisha Thakur, a former corporate executive who founded and now runs Money Zen Wealth Management, practices transcendental meditation to clear her mind in the morning. She does two 20-minute sessions a day, the first before breakfast and the second in the evening, and focuses on breathing and repeating a mantra in her head. She's found it to be one of the most life-enhancing practices she's ever experienced. At least that is what she told to Vanderkam. Expressing gratitude is another great way to center yourself and get the proper perspective before heading to the office. Writing down the people, places, and opportunities that you're grateful for takes just a few minutes, but can make a real difference in your outlook. And I guess this is some sort of optimism boost for the day also, so sounds like a good idea. Planning the day, week, or the month ahead is as important as anything else you do. And the best time for doing that is morning. Using the mornings to do the big picture thinking helps you prioritize and set the schedule for your days, weeks, months, and in general, your future. Everything's more easy when it's planned. While time management gurus may suggest putting off emails as long as possible, many successful people start the day with emails. They may quickly scan their inboxes for urgent messages that need an immediate response or craft a few more important emails that they can better focus on while their minds are still fresh and not overloaded by the day's work. This sounds like a nice habit to develop instead of checking your Facebook feeds in the morning or your Instagram feeds. Whether it's sitting in the corner at the dinner table and reading at the diner table and reading the papers or checking the blogs and Twitter from their phones, most successful people have a pre-breakfast ritual for getting the latest headlines. By the time they get to work, they have already a pretty good idea of what's going on in the world, and this way they can apply it to their jobs and work on changing the world to be a better place. So I think this is important, and I think I might use some of these practices in the morning by myself. As for myself, I usually wake up at 7, go jogging, before that eat breakfast, which is probably a mistake because after reading these columns, I got to know that it's healthier to eat after you exercise. So I hope this helped, and I'll see you after the break when I'm going to be talking about clothing and just trend advices and fashion tips. See you after the break.
Halfway there, wow, living on a prayer, take my hand.
Hey, welcome after the break. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, and this is show Do's and Don'ts, and I am your host, DJ Double M. So, as I said in my last segment, I'm going to discuss clothing and fashion tips in my second segment. And let's be true here. Clothing is a really important part of our lives. Your image means a lot in your social and everyday life. The way we look and carry ourselves highly influences what people think of us. You might say, I don't care what anyone thinks of me, but this would be nothing else but a sign of immatureness. Because by saying this, you are leaving out people who play or could play important roles in your life, such as teachers, professors, co-workers, bosses, and even relatives. Even family notice that, if you can believe me. The way you look and act grids your life path. Since we don't have enough time to discuss how to dress for every particular occasion, from a family dinner to a cocktail party at a club and to a job interview, today I'm only going to discuss the broader side of this topic, the basics. Let's start by a number of biggest mistakes girls do in their outfits. So the first one is tights that are too tight. A visible underwear line is never okay. I don't know what girls who walk around like this think, because from my point of view, it is not possible to call such thing classy or sexy or even appropriate. Controversially, it looks untastefully and trashy. You don't want to look like someone who is desperately begging for attention, do you? And if right now you're mumbling that you want your legs to look thinner or that your jeans hides your thigh gap and doesn't show it off, that's not an excuse. There are plenty of thick enough and tight enough ties that will show off every curve of your body and also successfully hide the panty line. So please choose those instead of the see-through ones. Number two, imagine a really good-looking girl. Her hair is perfect, her makeup is wonderful, she has nice clothes on, her legs look like they're a mile long, but she can't take a step. She looks like a giraffe on ice that has diarrhea. Girls, listen carefully, because I'm going to have to break it for you again. Don't wear heels if you can't walk on them, if you can't use them. Practice at home, not in public, unless you want to be the nice person who decided to become the comedian of the day or even the week. Heels are supposed to add gallons and balance to you, not to make you look like you're feeling really uncomfortable and that you're struggling with every step you take. So if you desperately need to look taller, choose platforms for starters. It's an easy way to practice for heels. Number three, I bet every girl has that one little hot dress that is almost perfect. Why isn't it perfect if it fits your body perfectly, complements your pluses and hides your flaws, and like that wouldn't be enough, is still in fashion? Because it has a nerve-wracking habit to climb up your body. Yes, I'm talking about the one that you have to fix and pull down every two steps you take. Sorry again, but I have to say no to that one. Go look up sales in your area and find another as perfect dress that wouldn't have this annoying quality. So let's move on to clothing tips. Sure, girls, may I have your attention, please? Don't wear long dresses unless you're wearing high heels. I know this sucks, especially when you want to get that light spring look, and I know it because I feel like that every warm season of the year. But I'm about to tell you something fun. We might not be able to pull off long dresses, but high-waisted shorts and skirts, which are usually in fashion, were invented for us, and they do not look as good on tall girls, so we are officially allowed to wear those around all summer long. A joke for short girls. God only lets things grow until they're perfect. Some of us didn't take as long as others. Choose heels with a low-cut vamp. Here's a small trick that can change the way you shoe shop. Shoes that have a low-cut vamp instantly enlarge in your leg and makes them look slimmer as well. So when you're wearing skirts, shorts, and dresses, choose that kind of heels. What's a vamp? It's the portion of a shoe that cuts across your foot at the front, if I'm explaining it properly. So a low vamp cuts across the base of the toes, while high vamp can come up to foot and possibly up to the ankle. If you're able to find a pair that matches your skin tone, that's even better to give the illusion of mile-long legs. Ditch your gigantic shoulder bags. keeping your accessories proportionately scaled to your body size is a smart move for petite girls, starting with the oversized bag. Here's why. Every time you cause the eye to take in width, you reduce the amount of height it takes in. That means smaller cross body bags, clutches, and small top handle totes are your best bet. Chop your hair. Long hair drags petite girls down, while shorter hair does the opposite. It makes you look taller. For the wary, wavy lob, long bob is the best option. It shows off your shoulders and your neckline, which makes you look taller. Plus, it is so chic. Daring gals should always choose this and go even shorter. And hairs are gonna grow back. It's not like it's permanent. Another tip for short girls, stick with skinny belts. When it comes to belts, short girls should always opt for a skinny version. It'll define your natural waist in the most flattering way possible, but won't cut you in half and half the way a super thick belt can. That would cause you look shorter and disproportionate. So let's move on. Although many people think that clothes were made for those who are taller, maybe because of the runway models, the reality is that leggy ladies and tall girls have just as hard of a time while finding items that fit properly as anyone else. Unlike their petite girls, tall women often struggle to find pieces with long enough hemlines and wide enough shoulders. Unlike shorties, however, they can wear all long skirts and dresses they find at the shops, and also short-waisted jeans to show off their bellies. Show off the legs. Short shorts are a fabulous way to flaunt your best feature, your legs. Or a flowing skirt if you feel uncomfortable wearing shorts. When selecting tops, avoid necklines that are too close to or hide your neck, such as turtlenecks. Even if you're wearing a turtleneck, choose a fancy scarf to go along with it, or an interesting necklace or something like that. But a better choice for you would be V-necks, scoop necks, or ruffles to visually break the length of the torso and direct the eye toward design details. So, a tip for curvy girls. Don't feel fat because you can't wear crop tops, and please don't wear S-size clothes when you are an L. This doesn't make you look slimmer, only pathetic. You don't want to look like a sausage when you wear the same as your petite friends does, but it's impossible. You have womanly shapes, and you should be more than proud of them because it's beautiful. Make them look good. Here are some tips for you. You can wear décolletés and pull off that without having to wear a push-up bra or makeup to make your chest look okay, as short petite girls do. You would also look really good in tulip-shaped skirts or pencil-shaped skirts. That would probably be a better expression of this if you're not that tall. High-waisted clothes are good for you. Never choose horizontally striped shirts and dresses and jeans, anything striped horizontally, because it makes you optically wider. Also, don't wear crop tops, no matter how trendy they are, and never buy a muffin t-shirt. They are designed to give skinny girls more shape and roundness, which you don't lack. Waist. When you have curves, you have a waist also. This body feature is the single most important part of a curvy girl's body, period. By highlighting the waist, you not only balance the proportion of your body, but you look slimmer also. When you bypass the waist area by not shaping it, your entire body looks as wide as your hips and your bust area, which for curly girls can often be quite ample. There are many ways to shape your waist. The obvious are to chop tops, jackets, and dresses that have a waist definition. You can also look for seaming and side panels in the waist area, which will create the illusion of an even slimmer midsection. Whatever you do, don't ignore this area. So that is pretty much about fashion, but I would like to add to the end of the segment that whatever you do, don't dress trashy and don't try to show it all, because it's never interesting to anyone when you can already see it all. Don't wear too big décolletés, because that's just a sign that you're probably under 20 and you lack attention. So stay classy, never trashy, just a little nasty. And see you after the break.
We're checking center stage on the mic, and we're putting it on wax. It's the new style.
4 and 3 and 2 and 1.
What up?
And when I'm on the mic, the suckers run.
Word.
Surprised you're on my
team.
Hello everyone, welcome here after the break. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. I'm your host DJ Double M, and this is my show Do's and Don'ts. So if you haven't heard my last three segments, I've already discussed relationships in a really funny way, 12 things successful people do before breakfast, which was also an interesting segment, and fashion tips and advices for various sizes girls. And now I'm going to move on to a segment about what majors should you choose in college. First of all, don't choose blindly. If a high percentage of people succeeded in some field, no matter what it is, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to climb out of the average section in it. Every person has their own unique talents and skills, and if today the bigger part of the population happened to be naturally gifted in, let's say, law studies or business studies, it doesn't mean that you are not belonging to the 1% that might succeed or could possibly have a really great career in, for example, arts. So choosing a study field at some point was or is a big dilemma for everyone. We all find ourselves caught between our parents, our friends, and our own opinions at one point in our lives. We are terribly nervous, horribly exhausted, and feel way too young to make such a decision. And it's natural, because it's a huge step that directs your further life path. But even though at this point it can be really hard to think rationally, don't let the nerve to get to you. Whatever major you choose, don't pick what's easiest. Most importantly, pick one that you will love and that will guarantee a job once you graduate. And if you don't succeed in the first try, or at the first try, you can always change it. That wouldn't be the end of the world, would it? And a little extra knowledge in any field at all, couldn't ever harm anyone. So, I have read the Princeton reviews, and they were talking about top 10 majors, which I'm going to introduce you to. Be warned, however, that these are not necessarily the degrees that garner the most demand in the job market. More importantly, they don't lock you into a set career path, and this means you can choose more than one occupation after graduating. Each major offers unique intellectual challenges and develops skill sets that will be applicable to various careers. Therefore, if you are still undecided or not yet 100% sure of what you want to do in the future, it might be helpful to look through these. And even if you are already in college, listen up. You might get to know something new about the degree you've chosen, if it's going to be in these 10 degrees. Or maybe to get to know more about your opportunities if you stick to this one that you've chosen. So the first one is Business Administration and Management Commerce. Think you're a born leader? You're going to need stellar people skills. No room for wallflowers here. And talents in problem solving, number crunching, and decision making are something you should have if you choose this major. And don't forget great communication skills. While studying business, you will get throughout grounding in the theories and principles of accounting, finance, marketing, statistic, I bet economics also, and human resource functions. You will be the whiz of how to budget, organize, plan, hire, direct, control, and manage various kinds of organizations, from really small ones to $1 million corporations. This major will also get you thinking about issues of the planet, such of our world, such as diversity, ethics, politics, and other dynamics that play a role in every work environment and in everyone's life. Make sure those competitive juices are following. The business world is all, well, business. So the second degree is something I thought about before choosing communications, actually, and it's psychology. If you find yourself dwelling into why certain people react to certain aspects of their lives and environments in a certain way, when studying psychology will help you learn about the biology of our brains that influence our choices in life. Psychology majors focus on such features of the human mind as learning, cognition, intelligence, motivation, emotions such as love, anger, sadness, and so on, perception, personality, mental disorders and illnesses, and the ways in which our individual preferences are inherited from our parents or shaped by our environments from when we were children. Within the field, psychologists seek to educate, communicate, and resolve many of the problems surrounding human behavior. This could be really interesting, and after reading this, I felt a little bit sad that I didn't double major, actually, but yeah, well, maybe you're going to choose psychology. So the third major is nursing, which is big in our university. Nursing is for compassionate individuals with a great mind for the intricate and sometimes heartbreaking world of medicine. That's the well-suited personality for a nursing career. In the course of evaluating, diagnosing, and treating health problems, there is also the chance to work with ever-evolving and ultra-sophisticated technology, and this is more than interesting. Nursing majors take the traditional science and liberal arts courses as a first-year student and begin clinical rotations at hospitals and other healthcare facilities during the second semester of their sophomore year. Certification exams are required after graduation from an accredited nursing program before you can be officially registered. And the job prospects for nurses are not only plentiful but also varied, available in fields such as geriatrics, neurology, oncology, obstetrics, and pediatrics also. Biology and biological sciences is the fourth in our list. From microscopic organisms to cloning procedures, biology encompasses pretty much the whole world. Biology majors can study human, plants, animals, and the environments in which they live, and studies are conducted at the cellular level, the ecosystem level, or anywhere in between. You might find yourself looking to uncover secrets and for ways to solve problems such as finding a cure for a disease, maybe even cancer. Who knows? You might win the next prize in this competition. Biology majors might find themselves in med schools or in one of many growing fields such as genetics and biotechnology, or working as a veterinarian, optometrist, ecologist, or an environmentalist. Fifth in our list is education. Patience, creativity, dedication, enthusiasm, compassion. These are the features required for someone who would choose to study education. Education majors tend to have an abundance for all these traits usually. In this major, you're going to learn skills necessary to become an effective and inspirational teacher with the ability to influence young children and teenagers when they are most impressionable. Although much of the coursework will be general education material, most states require you to choose a specific grade level you'd like to teach. When you're done with coursework, you'll find yourself in the classroom as a student teacher. This practicum lasts for one semester to a full academic year, and that would be a great experience for anyone. So maybe if you're not quite sure of what your major should be, you could try education. It provides you a broader spectrum of knowledge in life and the whole of it. And after that, you can always change, or maybe you decide to stay and be a great professor. We have a lot of those in Dominican University. English language and literature is the sixth in the list. If you find yourself generally immersed in some book, anything from Shakespeare to Hemingway to Kafka, you will likely find others just like you in the English department. English programs focus on literature, language, and writing, and an English major will encounter a wide array of absorbing works of fiction, poetry, and nonfiction from around the world and throughout history. Analyzing the works of the greatest minds and imaginations the human civilization has produced will surely sharpen your critical, emotional, creative, and moral faculties. The study of literature also helps to shed some light on the answers to the enduring questions of the human condition. This degree is tremendous preparation for a future in law, journalism, publishing, graduate studies, and just about anything else, pretty much for anything else. Number seven is economics. Economics is the study of choices, those of individuals, businesses, governments, and societies, and how they choose to spend their time and money and otherwise to allocate their resources. And you guessed it, economics involves heavy dose of critical thinking and math. So if you don't like, don't choose this. This study of the production, distribution, and consumption of goods and services is an indispensable tool for making sense of the intricates of the modern world. And this is actually true. It is also an excellent preparation for a future in business, as well as for graduate studies in law, public policy, and international studies. So economics, you will use that in your everyday life, in your household. So it's a really good major to choose if you're not sure about that. Communication studies, speech, communication, and rhetoric. Communication majors tend to be great storytellers with quick wits and fairly personalities. You'll spend a significant amount of time scrutinizing different kinds of presentations, such as speeches and scripts, and the strategies behind the messages that speakers and writers use to make their points. You'll learn about verbal and nonverbal messages, audience, their reactions, and the varied effects of different communication environments. It will prepare you for a wealth of careers in business, advertising, human resources, public relations, government, education, media, and social services. And this just made me feel really good because I'm a communications major, and so far, I'm really enjoying this major. So I highly recommend that one. The ninth in our list is political science and government. Because it often deals with current events and sophisticated statistical analysis, political science is timely, fascinating, and perpetually changing. In a nutshell, it's the study of politics, of government, and some of common concentrations are American government, public policy, foreign affairs, political philosophy, and competitive government. Political science majors develop excellent critical thinking and communication skills also, and more broadly, an understanding of history and culture itself, because they have to repeat that at the coursework. There will be lots of reading, writing, and math, but if you want to succeed, you have to work. That's the only way, unless you want to be a cheap LA wife and do nothing for the rest of your life. Possible career paths are diverse, from a lawyer to a politician to a journalist. So political science is a not bad degree to choose. And the last one, the number 10 in our list, is computer and information sciences. Not only you will learn more about computers, hardware, and software, you'll also learn about the applications of such knowledge, such as technology, how it fits into a business scenario, and so on. You'll be exposed to areas like robotics, natural language recognition programs, artificial intelligence, programming languages, numerical analysis, and gaming technologies. Problem solving is a major component of CIS, no matter which segment of the industry you want to pursue. But all in all, for the finish of this segment, I would like to have you remember that you cannot categorize yourself to the majority. Whatever that is, and you know, whatever people succeed in whatever spheres, it's not you. And you want to live your life enjoying every day in your job, because even if you get a really well-paid job, you will still strive to make more money, because it's kind of a humid trait or a personality type, I guess that would be the better way to state it. And imagine yourself sitting every day in an office that you hate, doing the job that you hate, and staring at a picture or a photograph of a house that you would like to live in one day. And, you know, you're not happy at the moment. And the most important thing in life is that one should be happy within its his or her journey, not about the goal and not when it's reached, because it's never reached. And this is it for my today's show. I'm really glad you were with me this wonderful Tuesday morning. I hope I'm going to see you again, same time, same place, in a week, Tuesday from noon to 1. You've been listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. This was Shoot Do's and Don'ts, and I am DJ Double M. See you next week. Bye-bye.